The following story has been brought to you by StoriesToInspire.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, before I conclude, I'm going to share with you one of the most devastating events of my youth. Not just of my youth, but of any that grew up in Crown Heights at the time that I was growing up. Back in our neighborhood, there was a very sweet boy named Avremi. A very studious, sincere, and sensitive boy. We sang together in a children's choir. He had an exceptionally beautiful voice. Avremi was 2 years older than me. He was around 16 at the time of the story. He studied in the Chabad yeshiva called Olei Torah, located on Troy Avenue in Crown Heights. One day, Avremi approached one of his friends in the yeshiva, and he discussed a certain phone call he thought that they should make together. Now, in those days, kids didn't have cell phones. Adults didn't have cell phones either. So these two boys stepped out of the yeshiva, and they walked to a phone booth. Most kids today don't know what a phone booth is, but for those in our generation, it was an actual booth. You opened the door, you went inside, and you made a phone call. Avremi entered the booth to make the call, while the friend stood right outside the phone booth. Avremi was in the thick of his conversation when these three hooligans approached the boy standing outside the booth. They didn't demand anything. They didn't say a word. One of them pulled out an ice pick from inside his jacket and thrust it at the boy standing outside the booth. By reflex, the boy jumped back, and the weapon struck only ear. The hooligans then turned their attention to the boy inside the booth. Unfortunately, he had nowhere to run, nowhere to jump, when the thrust came at him, and he was stabbed 3 times in the chest. Their blood mission accomplished, the hooligans ran off. The standing boy grabbed his friend and began running with him back to the yeshiva, yelling for help. The ambulance came quickly. Avremi was rushed to the hospital, but by the time he arrived, he was already gone. The family of this beautiful young man was broken. The entire community, especially all of the youth, we were in total shock. As you can imagine, back then, nobody was all too interested in the minor details as to what happened that night. Who was Avremi calling 9 o'clock that night? Why, when the parents went into Avremi's bedroom, did they find a bag of cookies and a bottle of wine? None of this seemed to matter in the greater scheme of things. The darkness was too great for such things to matter to the parents. The boy that was outside the booth was too consumed with shock and with grief, coupled with the trauma of then having to face the murderers and testify against them in court, to ever go back and further revisit the events of that night. A few years ago, 33 years after this tragedy, the boy who was standing outside the phone booth that night, now a grown man, gets a call. It's one of Avremi's brothers. His parents want to know. 33 years later, they're asking for some of the missing pieces to fill in the details of that night. I heard this directly from the boy that was outside the booth, as he was someone living in Agoura Hills at the time. His name is Shmulek. Cousin of the deceased boy is sitting in the room right now as well. Rabbi Yossi Gordon's relative. So the family is asking of Shmulek, why were you guys out there that night? Who was Avremi talking to on the phone when he was attacked? So Shmulek proceeds to provide the missing pieces. He explained that he and Avremi had a weekly Miftsayim route. Miftsayim route is where on Fridays we were sent out to different places of New York to put on tefillin with people, to give out Shabbos candles. So they were assigned to a particular street in Manhattan where there was a stretch of electronic stores, mostly owned by Israelis. They would visit with the storekeepers. They would talk to them. Whoever would be interested in putting on tefillin, they would put on tefillin with them. So Shmulek goes on to say that there was one guy on their route who was quite secular, but nevertheless always welcomed them and always, as he said, tolerated them. One week when Avremi and Shmulek showed up, the guy tells him that his wife just had a baby girl. So they wished him mazel tov. And then they got into this whole conversation about this would be a good time for your wife to start lighting Shabbos candles in honor of the baby. And then we said, you know what? If your wife just had this baby girl, why don't you come on Monday? Come to 770 Eastern Parkway. We'll meet you by the Rebbe's minyan. And there you'll name your baby. You'll give your baby a Jewish name at the Torah in front of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Yeah, he says, I don't know. I'm not religious. I'm not so interested. I never did that for my other kids. He wasn't up for it. But we were persistent. We were kids. We started pushing and we started pressuring. We're giving you an opportunity to name your baby in front of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. How could you not? It'll be such a blessing for her. It'll be so important for her. And finally said, okay, fine. He writes down the address. Monday morning, this is the time to be there. Okay. Avremi went and bought some cookies and some wine so that after the baby naming, they can say a little l'chaim and make a bracha. Sunday night in yeshiva, Avremi walks over to Shmulek and he says, you know, I have a feeling he's going to back out. So why don't we go and call him now and remind him that we'll be waiting for him tomorrow morning? And Shmulek said, I said, yeah, it's a good idea. It was with this father that Avremi was conversing or negotiating that fateful night in the phone booth. And the man was indeed trying to back out. I thought about it. I don't know. And Avremi said, no, you're coming. You're coming. You're coming. And by the way, did your wife light a Shabbos candle? And it was at that very moment that he was brutally murdered. Those words were his last. Shmulek finished filling in the missing pieces to Avremi's brother. Avremi's brother said, thank you. That explains a lot for us. So Shmulek said, now, I answered all of your questions. Can you answer one of mine? He said, sure. Why, after 33 years, are you calling me now? Why now? So the brother says, I'll tell you why now. The other night, my parents got a phone call. It was a woman calling from Israel. She said her name is Pam, also known as Pesha. She said, you don't know me, but I want to tell you a little bit about myself. I come from a secular family. None of my siblings are religious. But I, for some reason, I always had not just a curiosity, but an intense thirst for spirituality. Although I didn't receive much of a Jewish education, I tried to learn whatever I could, wherever I could. Several years ago, I made Aliyah to Israel. I attended a Jewish study program, and soon enough, I started living a total observant lifestyle. She went on to say, one time my father came to visit me, and he said, there's something I think you should know. When you were born, two yeshiva boys came to see me. They insisted that I go to the synagogue to give you a Jewish name at the Torah on Monday morning. And I didn't want to go. Well, that Sunday night, one of them called me. He was talking to me about the importance of doing this for you, my dear daughter. When he was killed, he was murdered right then in the middle of the conversation with me. When I pieced together what had happened, because it was all over the news that night, there was no way I could not respect this dying man's wish. So I went to the synagogue Monday morning. And I gave you a Jewish name, Pesha, just like that passionate, caring yeshiva boy pleaded with me to do. In the days thereafter, I went to the parents' home where they were sitting shiva, and I wanted to go over to them to say something, but I couldn't do it. There was such pain, there was such tears, I couldn't bring myself to say anything. I wish that I had, but I never did. And for years, I put this whole story out of my mind, but now, my dear daughter, I see how devoted you are to your Jewish heritage. I thought you should know how it is that you got your Jewish name. This is what this woman is telling Avremi's parents over the phone. She said, not long after telling me this story, my father passed away. He died young. But I'm so grateful that he shared this story with me before leaving this world, because you see, all along, I've always felt there is someone up there calling me, rooting me on my spiritual journeys. I could have ignored it, but it was such a powerful tug, and it wouldn't let go. I've always believed that it was that tug from above that pushed me to leading the life that I'm living now. I have two sons, Eldad and Aviv. They're about to start Cheder now. And I truly believe that that tug came from that boy who in his last moments of life made sure that I would get my Jewish name at the Torah. So now at the age of 33, I did the research. I looked up a boy murdered 33 years ago while talking on the phone on a street in Crown Heights. I found the name. I found the parents. I found you. And although I know you know this, I want you to hear it from me. What a zchus, what a privilege you had to bring such a lofty soul into this world, even for such a short time. I hope that you will agree to see me when I come to New York to visit in the near future. I think that my father and your son would appreciate that very much. 33 years after this most horrific tragedy, these parents finally get to hear the rest of the story, or at least part of it. And so many of our stories remain unfinished. Each and every day we pray for a time where we'll finally learn the rest of the story, that we'll be able to put everything into proper context so that we finally have more answers than questions. But in the meantime, we must hear the stories. We must share the stories, for they are the lifelines to our essence. We must sit with our children and tell them stories, the stories of their heritage, the stories of their ancestors, but not just tell it to them. We must tell it to them with passion, with excitement, with enthusiasm. We have to bring it alive. We have to make those stories your own stories.
Enjoyed this story? Come again. Bring a friend. StoriesToInspire.org.